All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to History of the Talmud, Part 12. We were speaking about the period of time, I guess in the heyday of the Yavne era, when Rabban Gamliel and his students make this watershed decision to start paskening like Beis Hillel. And once they start paskening like Beis Hillel, it also creates a new pluralistic feel to the discussion, where they're dealing with many, many opinions. They're also embracing a new form of creativity. I shouldn't say a new form, but they're embracing the creativity that used to exist only in the hallowed halls of the Sanhedrin and now is being kind of spread around through the Beis Medrash. We spoke about two objectors to this. The conscientious objector, and that is Rabbi Tarfon, and the unconscientious objector, and that is Rabbi Eliezer. We spoke last week about how when Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus, when they quoted for him what was going on in the Beis Medrash of Rav Elazar ben Azariah, who had opened the doors and allowed for all the multitudes of opinion to come in, Rabbi Eliezer was not ecstatic about this, especially since everything that was decided and concluded through innovation, he felt that he knew already from tradition. And he was the classic traditionalist. And he wanted to preserve the methodologies of the past that decided halakha based on the traditions and nothing else. We saw, his very much singular insistence, his stiff-neckedness, is that a word, in not quoting a halacha that he had not heard first from his Rebbe. And this was basically his objection. And so now imagine where this all comes to a head. It all comes to a head in a singular moment where Rabbi Eliezer takes a position based upon tradition and based upon novel interpretation, his colleagues disagree. So you have here a conflict between the two. And Rabbi Eliezer, despite the fact that his colleagues are the majority, he remains steadfast in his position and not moving. This is what we're talking about here. In the famous Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis. The Gemara 59b in Bava Metzia speaks about Tanur Shel Achnai, the oven of Achnai, which we said last week was this type of oven that was put together via glue. Clay shards were taken that had fallen apart and were put back together. And there was a debate as to the purity status of this oven. Rabbi Eliezer, it seems, maintained that it was pure, while the rabbis took the position. While his colleagues, I shouldn't say they're all rabbis, while his colleagues, the majority, took the opinion that it was impure. So my achnai, so the Gemara says, what is an achnai? Why do they call it the oven of achnai? So Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, says Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Samuel, Sheikifu dvarim ke'achna zo vitim'uhu. Right, they surrounded Rabbi Eliezer like a snake, and they declared it impure, against Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Tana, so we learned, Be'oso hayom heshiv Rabbi Eliezer kol tshuvos sheba olam velo kiblu himenu. On that day, Rabbi Eliezer answered all the answers in the world, and they did not accept it from him. Amar lahem, he says to them, Im halacha kamosi charuv ze yochiach. If the halacha is like me, he says, let the carob tree prove it. What happens? Ne'kar charuv mimkomo. The carob tree gets up from its place. Mea aman, it walks 100 amos, 100 ells. V'amri la arbamios ama. Some people say it was even 400 ells. The point is, trees don't often move places, particularly not carob trees, which are known for what? for being very slow in growing. So too, probably if they were walking, they probably would be more tortoise than hare, I would think. But nonetheless, it moves. So obviously, if someone says, I'm right, and the carob tree will prove it, and the carob tree gets up and walks 100 amos in order to prove someone correct, that would be quite meaningful to someone. So Amru lo, say the rabbis to Rabbi Eliezer, Ein mevi'in ra'aya min ha'charuv. We can't bring proofs from carob trees. Chazer ba'amar lahem, he goes back and he says to them, Im halacha kamosi ama samayim yochichu. If the halacha is like me, let the flowing spring prove it. What happens? Chazru ama samayim li'achoreyem, the spring starts to flow the other direction. Amrlo, they responded to him, Ein mevi'in raya me'ama samayim, we don't bring proof from flowing springs. Chazar v'amar lahem, he goes back and he says, Im halacha kamosi kosle beis hamedrash yochichu. If the halacha is like me, so let the walls of the beis medrash prove it. What happens? Hitu kosle beis hamedrash lipol. So the walls of the beis medrash started to fall. Ga'ar bahem Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua became angry with the walls of the beis medrash. Amar lahem, and he says to them, Im talmidei chachamim menatzchim ze b'halacha, atem mativchem. He says, if talmidei chachamim, the scholars, are looking to beat each other in halacha, then what are you guys worth? Lo naflu, they did not fall mipnei kvodo shel Rabbi Yoshua, in honor to Rabbi Yoshua, out of deference to Rabbi Yoshua. Velo zakfu, but they did not return to standing because of the honor, mipnei kvodo, Rabbi Eliezer. The adayin matin v'omdin, they still remain slightly warped. Chazar v'amar lahem, im halacha kamosi min hashamayim yuchichu. Says, if the halacha is like me, then let them prove it from the heavens. Yatzasa basko v'amra. Out comes a voice from the heavens and says, malachem eitzel Rabbi Eliezer. What do you have against our friend Rabbi Eliezer here? Shalacha kamosa b'chol makom, that the halacha is like him in all cases. Amar Rabbi Yoshua raglav, stands up Rabbi Yoshua and he says, Va'amar lo bashamayim hi, the Torah is not in the heaven. My lo bashamayim hi, what does that mean that it's not in the heaven? So Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, shekvar nisna Torah mehar Sinai, the Torah was already given at Har Sinai. Ein anu mashgichin bebaskol, so therefore we don't hear voices from heaven, no longer are relevant when it comes to the decisions of halacha. Shekvar kasafta behar Sinai betorah acharei rabim latos, you already wrote in your Torah that we follow the majority. You can't help but feel when you read this Gemara that Rabbi Eliezer and everyone else are having a different conversation. Right? What does Rabbi Eliezer keep on saying? The heavens will prove it. The carob tree will prove it. The spring waters will prove it. The walls of the base medrash will prove it. And what's Chachamim's answer? Those aren't proofs. Again, they're dealing in a different form of conversation. We're Rabbi Eliezer to declare it's a gzeira shava, it's a hekesh, it's a kal v'chomer, you know, it's a svara, it's a pasuk, it's something. Some sort of interpretive method that would somehow bring some sort of support for his position. That would have been something that would have been meaningful to the chachamim of the time. But he's not bringing proofs like that. He's bringing osos and mosim. He's bringing signs and miracles and tricks. That isn't something that's meaningful to them. And what you have here is a difference of experience in terms of the way halacha is decided. Right? For Rabbi Eliezer, this is all there is. What's our goal in halacha? Our goal in halacha is to find out exactly what was said and what has been passed down from generation to generation. And that's how we're going to decide the halacha. Whereas the rest of the Chachamim are looking at it as an interpretive method that was given over to Har Sinai, that they are going to use to get down to what was said at halacha. But again, these types of miraculous events aren't going to influence them in terms of the way they decide halacha. And their proof that Rabbi Eliezer is wrong is itself an interpretive method. What do they say? They say, oh, it says in the Torah, lo bashamayim, it's not in the heavens. That means that the Torah was given over to us for us to create and forge understanding from it. The laws of the Torah, the interpretive methods of the Torah, the conceptual ideas of the Torah, those are given over to humanity to interpret and apply as they responsibly see fit during their generations. Rabbi Eliezer, again, is the non-conscientious objector. He believes that their entire methodology is itself flawed, that that's not what we should be doing. We should be looking to preserve the traditions of the past without being overly creative. And that's why he has this conflict with Rabbi Akiva in particular. Rabbi Akiva, who shows him perhaps more respect than anyone. Again, what we find historically also is how aware the rabbis were of how revolutionary they were being. It's very rare that you have revolutionaries understanding that they are in fact changing the world around them, or that they are in fact dealing with issues that are well above them. It's not often that we get to this type of experience. The story goes on, is Ashkechei Rabbi Nassan le'Eliyahu. Rabbi Nassan later on bumps into, of all people, Rabbi Nassan's taking a walk and he bumps into none other than Eliyahu Anavi. Amar Lei, so he says to him, once you're here, I have a question. My Avid Kucha Barichu Bahaihi Shaita. Says, what was God doing at that moment? Amar Lei, so Eliyahu Anavi answers him, Kachiech va'amar, he was smiling and saying, Nitzchuni banai, Nitzchuni banai. He was saying, my children have bested me. My children have bested me. Why? Because what are they doing? The very Torah that he gave them, they are using the rules of that Torah and the rules of that Torah interpretation to basically ignore his contemporary opinion on halacha. That's what it says. God has given his opinion, 4,000, 5,000 years ago at Har Sinai, and that opinion is unchangeable, will never change, and therefore anything he says later on is not to be viewed as meaningful, at least in the halachic sense. I'm sure if God spoke to us in other senses, it would definitely be something that would be significant. The Gemara continues the story, interestingly enough. Amru oso hayom heviu kol taro shetia Rabbi Eliezer b'sarfum ba'esh. On that day, they brought in everything that Rabbi Eliezer had declared to be pure, and they burnt it. Vinumnu alav ubarchuhu. And they all gathered together, and they decided, since Rabbi Eliezer would not yield to majority rule, which was itself a rejection of traditional halachic thought. So what should we do? So they counted each other up, and they decided that we have no choice but to excommunicate Rabbi Eliezer. This was the decision. The Amru, and they said, Mi yelech v'yodio, who will go and tell him this? So we said, remember, Rabbi Akiva was in his shir for a significant period of time, did not pipe up to the end. But once he did pipe up, it seems that the two formed a very powerful bond. So Amar Lahem, Rabbi Akiva, Ani Eilech, let me go. Shema Yelech Adam She'eino Hagun, lest someone who is unworthy of this task goes. V'yodio, and he'll tell him, V'nimtza Machriv Es Kol HaOlam Kulo. What's going to happen? Someone who is unworthy will go here and do this, and what's going to end up happening? He's going to destroy the entire world with his actions, right? That's how powerful they viewed Rabbi Eliezer. One of the things that you'll see is, despite the fact that there was a great disagreement here, and Rabbi Eliezer is going to be excommunicated for the rest of his life, Nevertheless, his halachic opinions and his power as a rabbinic interpreter and a Torah scholar were never once questioned. They understood that what they were dealing with here was a unique individual who had a great power. So their fear was that if someone who was unworthy of this task were sent to Rabbi Eliezer, that he would be machriv his kol ha'olam kulo, that he would be able to destroy the world. So ma'asa Rabbi Akiva, what did Rabbi Akiva do? Lava shecharim, he wore black, minis atev shecharim, and he dressed himself in black clothing. V'yashav the fun of Birachok, arba amos, and he sat four L's away from him. So why is that important? You're not allowed within four L's of someone who is excommunicated. So he is dressed in black, the clothing of the mourner, and he is four cubits or L's away from Rabbi Akiva. So Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer, Akiva, ma yom yomayim. So he says, what makes today different than yesterday? So Amar lo. So Rabbi Kiva says to him, Rabbi, my teacher, kamdumeli, it seems to me, shechaverim bibdilim mimcha, that your friends are separating themselves from you. So Rabbi Eliezer is no dope. He gets the message. So what does he do? So someone who's excommunicated, ideally, is supposed to act like a mourner. So afhu kara begadav, he rent his garments, v'chalatz minalav, and he took off his shoes. Vinishmat, and he separated himself, v'yashav al-gabi akarka, and he sat down on the floor. Zagu einav d'maos, and tears flowed from his eyes. How powerful was Rabbi Eliezer? So laka ha'olam, the world was plagued. Shlish b'zeitim, one-third of the olive crop, u'shlish b'chitim, one-third of the wheat crop, u'shlish b'sa'orim, and one-third of the barley crop. V'yosh omrim af batek shebidei isha tafach. So some people say that even the dough that was in the hands of women who were making the dough already, even that shrunk. So that's what happens here. So they understood that they made a decision that they had to make, that the future of the Torah was dependent upon it, that this was going to be the future, this creative, pluralistic type of experience of Torah interpretation was ultimately going to be the experience. Nonetheless, it was a decision that they made with a heavy hand. Now recognize that Rabban Gamliel is in an odd situation here. Why is Rabban Gamliel in an odd situation? Number one, to a certain extent, he's not unsympathetic to Rabbi Eliezer. Rabban Gamliel, before Rav Elazar ben Azaria was made his partner, was to a certain extent in the camp of Rabbi Eliezer. He too had an iron-fisted approach to halacha. He too was very rigid in terms of his interpretive methods. And because of that, he has reason to be very sympathetic to what Rabbi Eliezer is going through. The other reason that Rabbi Gamliel has to be sympathetic to Rabbi Eliezer is, of all people, Rabbi Eliezer was married to Shalom, Rabbi Gamliel's sister. So not only is Rabbi Eliezer a partner of in philosophy with Rabbi Gamliel, or at least partially, but also Rabbi Eliezer is also Rabbi Gamliel's brother-in-law. So you can see why this puts Rabbi Gamliel in a very odd position. So the Gemara goes on to say, Tana ach gadol haya ba'osa hayom. Great was that day. Why? Shebechol makom shenasan bo einav, Rabbi Eliezer nisraf. Rabbi Eliezer, every place he looked on, he developed heat vision, heat ray vision. And every place he looked, he would burn it. The af Rabban Gamliel, and so to Rabban Gamliel, haya ba svina. And what happens? Rabban Gamliel was on a boat. And Amar Alav Nichshol Letava, what happens? Comes along a massive storm to sink his boat. Amar Kamidumeli She'in Ze Ela Bishvil Rabbi Eliezer Ben Horkanus. He says, the only reason this storm could be rising up against my boat has to be because of our decision regarding Rabbi Eliezer Ben Horkanus. Amar Al Raglav, he stood up on his feet. V'amar Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the World, Galoi V'yadu Alefanecha, it is revealed before you. Shalolich Vodi Asisi, I didn't do this for my own honor. V'lolich Vod Beis Abba, nor did I do it for the honor of my father's house, or my family, Asisi. Ela L'chvodcha, I did it for your honor. Shalo Yirbu Machlokes B'Yisrael. Why did I do this? Because I did not want there to be argumentation in Israel. Now, what was he saying? He says, yes, we are believers in Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. We are believers in this pluralistic approach, but ultimately we have to decide the halacha. And just because Rabbi Eliezer is unhappy with our methodology, he can't go around, you know, paskening halacha differently from us. So what happens? He needs to get in line, which he's never going to do. But what happens? Na chayam miza'afo, the sea calmed from its anger. Ema shalom de beisu de Rabbi Eliezer achte de Rabbi Gamliel. Ha'ivaymahu ma'isa ve'ilach lo ha'vashavka le Rabbi Eliezer le'mipal av alape. If you read my article in the Shaliach, so you know that Rabbi Eliezer's wife, she's even in a more awkward situation, because who is it that is upholding the excommunication of her husband? It's her brother. And so clearly, who is the recipient of all of Rabbi Eliezer's ire? Rabbi Gamliel. So what would she do? She would not allow Rabbi Eliezer to recite Tachnun, to fall on his face, for the entire time he was excommunicated, because that is, you know, one of the more powerful prayers one can recite. It is the beseechment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where you're really falling on your face. She would not allow Eliezer to recite that prayer, understanding that the day he recites that prayer is the day her brother dies. Because what is Rabbi Eliezer going to be saying? So Ahu Yom Aresh Yarchahava. To that day was Rosh Chodesh. The Ichlif bein Malei l'Chaser, and they got confused whether it was a Chodesh Malei or a Chodesh Chaser, whether it was a 30-day or a 29-day month. So what happens? She's coming home. Ika da amre asa anya v'kaya bava. She looked in the house. Apika le rifta ashkachte dinafal alan peha. What did she find? She found her husband saying tachanun. Amrele kum, get up. Katlit le'acha, you just killed my brother. Adahachi nafak shipura mi beit Rabban Gamliel deshchiv. Before, as she was speaking, there was a knock at the door with a message from the house of Rabban Gamliel that Rabban Gamliel had died. Amarla, so he says to her, mani yadat. He says to her, how do you know this? Amarla, so she says to him, kach mekublanu mi beis avi abba kol asharim nir'am chutz mei sharei ona'a. Right, that all the, that to someone who is what's it called? Who is excommunicated, all the gates are closed except for the one of hurt feelings. And what are you going to be davening for if not your hurt feelings? And because of that, Rabban Gamliel died. Interestingly, before we go to Rabbi Eliezer's end, just Rabban Gamliel's end, so who pipes up the day Rabban Gamliel dies is Rabbi Yoshua. So if you see right here, the Tosefta in the second parak of Tanis, Halacha Hei and Vav, it's the last source on your sheet. So it says, Kol Zman Shaya Rabban Gamliel Kayam, as long as Rabban Gamliel was alive, Haisa Halacha Noheges Kedvarav, the Halacha was like him. He was the dominant figure. If it, you know, he was the one who broke the ties. Lachar Misasa, when he died, Shal Rabban Gamliel, Bikesh Rabbi Yeshua Levatel Es Dvarav, Rabbi Yeshua, you remember, and he and Rabban Gamliel never really got along, so what do you want to do? He says, good, ding dong, the witch is dead, you know, let's undo all of his halachos, and let's paskin the way we wanted to paskin for generations. So Amar Rabban Yochanan ben Nuri al Raglav, Amar Chazien Abasa Resha Gufa Azil. He says, I see that the body goes after the heads. What does that mean? Kolzman shaya Rabban Gamliel kayam haysalacha honohegas kedvarav. Achshav shemeis atem mevakshim levatel es dvarav. He says, what? Just because he's died, you're going to undo? He didn't say what he said anymore. So here, Rabbi Yoshua is taking what the extremist position that Rabbi Eliezer was always afraid would ultimately happen. What's the extremist position? That basically there's no tradition, right? We get to decide everything all over again, right? You know, he's dead. Ding dong, the witch is dead. You know, now we get to rebuild everything the way we wanted to. What seems to be is also Rabbi Yoshua is sensible enough to realize that this isn't gonna fly. So Amar Yeshua, Anu Shomin Shomin Lecha, we hear you. Nikba Alacha Karaban Gamliel. Velo ir er adam al dvar. Rabbi Yeshua says, you're right. Let's go and paskin like Rabban Gamliel. So you see here them trying to find, you know, the balance between the two experiences that are going on here. Between the, you know, Rabbi Yeshua is almost an extremist. And you see, if you go back to that original Gemara that we learned about Moshe Rabbeinu going to Rabbi Akiva's shir, the Gemara in Menachos, Samad Beis. If you go back to that Gemara, so what was it that made Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, what calmed his soul when he sat in Rabbi Akiva's shir and he didn't understand anything? What ultimately calmed his soul was the fact that Rabbi Akiva says certain things are halach l'moshe misinai. That even though we're embracing the opportunities of creativity and comprehension and interpretation and pluralism and elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim and looking at things from all sides, there still has to be some sort of strain of tradition that goes through everything that keeps us on the straight and narrow there. And Rabbi Yoshua's attempt right after Rabbi Gamliel dies to, you know, undo everything that had been done, that was the decision was, that's a bit too bold. You know, we can't be making those types of decisions. Rabbi Eliezer's end is an interesting one. You realize he hasn't had a relationship for years with his friends, with his constant interlocutors, with his students. You know, you've basically robbed him of his life, which was teaching Torah. And so what happens, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Ches Amud Beis, talks about the last day of Rabbi Eliezer, where the only person he's still talking to, or he still has a relationship with, is his son. So when he gets sick, so what happens? Kishachala Rabbi Eliezer, the Gemara says, Nichnesu Rabbi Akiva v'chavei Rav Levakro. So when Rabbi Eliezer became sick, in come Rabbi Akiva and his friends to visit him. Hu Yoshev v'kinov shalo, he's sitting in his room, v'hein Yoshvin b'traklin shalo. And he is sitting in, and they are sitting in the outside parlor. V'oso hayom erev Shabbos haya, that day was erev Shabbos. V'haya nichnas horkenes b'no lachos tfilav. And horkenes came in, since it's erev Shabbos, to remove Tzvilin, Ga'arbo v'yatza b'nezifa. Rabbi Eliezer kicked him out when he tried to pull his tefillin out. So what does Horkenes automatically assume? Amar Lahen, he says to his friend, to Rabbi Akiva and the others, l'chaverav kamindume ani shedato shel Abba nitrafa. I think Pop has gone a little bit senile. So Amar Lahen, da'ato v'das imo nitrafa. So Rabbi Eliezer here overhears this, and he says, "I'm just fine." He says, "My son and his mother, they're the ones who are crazy." He says, "Maybe they're the ones who are senile." He says, "Hey Nachman, Nichan Isser Skila of Oskin BeIsser Shvus." He says, "The removal of tefillin on Shabbos is only an Isser Shvus." He says, "It's a rabbinic prohibition, and he's worried about that. And meanwhile, he's touching me, potentially killing me." The rabbis realized, Kevin Sharau, what did they see? Chacham Shidato Miyushev Etzalav. They see that he was still, had all of his faculties. Nichnesu V'yashvu Lefan of Meiracha Dalet Amos. So they stood with him, but they still remained four Amos away from him, again, because he is still very much excommunicated. So Amar Lehi, so he says, Amar Lahen, or Amar Lahu, Lama Basem. So he says to them, why are you here? So they say, Amar Lehi, Lumo Torah Banu, we've come to learn Torah. So it says Rabbi Eliezer, playing along with their game, the Ad Achshav Loma Lo Batem. So what took you so long? So Amar Lehi, Lo Hayala Nupnai, we didn't have enough time. Amar Lahen, Tmiyani Im Yamusu Misas Atzman. So he says to them, you know, he realized they're playing a game here. He says, I fear that you will not die natural deaths. Amar Lo, Rabbi Akiva Shalihu, Mahu. So Rabbi Akiva says to him, what about me? Amar Lo, so Rabbi Eliezer answers him, Shalcha Kasheh Mishalahen. Yours is going to be more difficult from the rest of them. And we all know what Rabbi Akiva's end was. So Natal Shtezra Osav, so Rabbi Eliezer takes his two hands, or his two arms, V'nichan Alibo, places them on his heart, Amar, and he says, Oy lachem, woe unto you, Shtezra Osai Kishahin Kishte Sifrei Torah, Shiniglalin. He says, my two arms are like two rolled Sifrei Torah, meaning no one's ever reading them. They've never... Harbei Torah Lamadati. I learned much Torah. V'harbei Torah Limadati. I taught much Torah. Harbei Torah Lamadati v'lo chasarti mirabosai afilu kekelev mihamelakek min hayam. He says, I learned so much. He says, I didn't even lose one drop of it. As much as a dog might drink from the ocean, meaning nothing, almost like the tiniest bit. And he says, "Harbei Torah limadati." He says, "I taught much Torah." V'lo chasrani talmidai ela kimchol b'shufoferes. And he says, "I didn't give over. I didn't leave anything out. Even that much of like a little." Drop in a coloring tube. The lo od elashani shone shalosh meos halachos bibaharis aza. He says, I know 300 halachos relating to a certain type of tzara'as. Velo ayadam sheshoalani bahem davar meolam. No one ever asked me one thing about it. Velo hay, and he says, velo od elashani shone shalosh meos halachos. The amrila. Shloshes alafim halachos minatinas kishu, and he says, I know 300, and some people say even 3,000 halachos relating to the planting of gourds, the halachos that go along with the planting of gourds. V'loaya adam sheshoalani ben davar meolam chutz meakiva ben Yosef. The only one who even thought to ask me about it was Rabbi Akiva. Pam achas ani v'hu mehalchin hayinu baderech amar li Rebbe lamdeni minatias kishuin. He says, once we were walking down the street, and he says, Rebbe, teach me about the planting of gourds. Amarti davar chad nismala kol asadeh kishuin. He says, I said one thing, and the whole field filled with gourds. Not only did I teach him about planting, but I taught him also about harvesting of gourds, etc., etc. He spoke about all these things with him. The Motei Shabbos. On Motei Shabbos, what happened is, so news came to Rabbi Akiva that Rabbi Eliezer had passed away, and he declared, Avi, Avi, Rechav Yisrael Farashav. He says, my father, the chariot of Israel and its horses, or its horsemen. Harbe maos yishli ve'einli shulchani la'artzosan. He says, I have much money, but I have no money changer to change it. What you have here is, I think, a recognition of the loss of Rabbi Eliezer. which is for every step forward that we take to a certain extent, halachically, to a certain extent, we're losing on the other side. And this was what Rabbi Akiva was here lamenting. Rabbi Akiva was lamenting that for all the gains that they had made, and for all the strides forward that they had made, they had really lost the influence of the type of Rabbi Eliezer. They've lost years of what he might have provided for Torah. I want to kind of a section of, I guess, Yavne. So Yavne ushers in period of time of great creativity. It's the type of creativity that is going to last until the conclusion, probably, of the Babylonian Talmud. It's the type of creativity that the rabbis, particularly of the Babylonian Talmud, are going to view as their guiding light. It's the type of creativity that was inspired by Hillel. It was the type of creativity that was embraced by most scholars, but also the recognition that with all of this creativity also comes a bit of a challenge, and that is that ultimately we're a tradition. Ultimately, we're bringing much, very much from the past, and so the challenge is going to be bringing the two of those together, being creative and innovative in terms of your halachic interpretation, yet at the same time also preserving the traditions and the historical record, etc. This is kind of the challenge that they're facing at the moment. What we focused on also, I guess, these last three or four shiurim is, I guess, the development of history inside the Beis HaMedrash. Outside the Beis HaMedrash, there's a whole lot of shaking going on. You have the Roman Empire under a horrible, horrible administrator by the name of Trajan, who is expanding his empire farther and farther east, successfully and unsuccessfully. It's successful in that he seems to be moving farther east. It's unsuccessful in that he is spreading himself awfully thin. And in order to finance these many wars that he is fighting, he is also taxing heavily the Jewish people and the people of the Middle East in order to pay for these wars. So this is going to create a bit of unrest. That, and now all of a sudden you have all these zealots. They weren't all killed. You know, they didn't all kill themselves at Masada. There are zealots all over the place, and those zealots are going to now be living in Alexandria and other places, and stoking the fires of revolution. So in the Beis Medrash you have revolution, and outside the Beis Medrash you have revolution, and that revolution against Trajan is going to inspire another revolution against Hadrian that we call historically the Bar Kokhba revolt, a revolt which, interestingly enough, we knew very little about from Talmudic sources, and most of the information that we have comes from archaeological sources. There's a ton of archaeological sources, but we do know that none other than the revolutionary of the Beis Medrash was also the revolutionary, or I should say, an inspiration or a guidepost to the revolutionary outside the Beis Medrash. And so in the next shiurim, hopefully, we'll start dealing with some of those issues, the relationship with Rome, how that comes out in the Talmud, and also perhaps the relationship with the burgeoning new group of Jews that call themselves Christians, which is going to be a whole other story in and of itself. I was thinking of doing it next Wednesday. I thought it was an appropriate day to do it. So if I can get a crowd out here, I know we can compete with the Chinese food. So we'll do it this coming Wednesday night. I'll send out a notice, see who's interested. Okay? Yeah, Jeff. Oh.